Hi, everybody. This is Eric Mann, 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour. Our show is called Voices from the Frontlines. And we have an important show today. We're going to have Benjamin Ramos with the Cuban Five, the political education project to free the Cuban Five. We'll talk about that a little bit more, five men who are in prison right now for ostensibly spying on the United States, which is pretty funny in itself, which wouldn't be as funny if they weren't in prison now for about 8 years. Then we'll be joined by Malcolm Suver, the lead organizer with the People's Hurricane Relief Fund in New Orleans, followed by M. Tangalisi Sunika of the New Orleans-based African-American Leadership Project on the upcoming one-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, where I'm happy a group of us are going to be going to New Orleans on the 21st of August. So stay tuned. KPFK 90.7 FM, Voices from the Frontlines. We'll be right back.
The king is dead. Now them kukuma kill the king for political reasons. Them no be talk as he be. Oh yeah, back to politics. Let's start to dribble and scheme for the same corruption activity. No plan.
So we'd like to welcome Benjamin Ramos to the show. Benjamin's an organizer with the Pro Libertad Freedom Campaign, an organization that supports Puerto Rican political prisoners and prisoners of war. He's also a member of the Political Education Project to Free the Cuban Five, formed in January 2005 with the goal of securing the freedom of five Cuban political prisoners currently imprisoned in the U.S., known collectively as the Cuban Five. Welcome, Benjamin, to the show.
Thank you very much.
Benjamin, I went on your website, excellent website, www.freethecuban5.com, and was trying to do some prep for the show, and I realized that I don't myself know the full story of how this story began. There's some interesting new developments we'll talk about. Could you take us back to the beginning? Who are the Cuban Five? How did they become the Cuban Five?
Well, first, again, thank you for having us on and giving us this opportunity to educate the communities around who the Cuban Five are. Simply, the Cuban Five are five Cuban compañeros that were arrested in September of 1998. Now, these compañeros infiltrated right-wing organizations that are based in Miami and collected information about possible terrorist activities that were being planned. As many folks should know, many of these organizations in Florida, which are primarily U.S.-backed organizations, have a history of terrorist actions in Cuba and throughout the United States. Now, they infiltrated these organizations to find out about their plans, finding out about these types of terrorist actions, and shared that information with the Cuban government. The Cuban government then shared that information with the United States in order to try to basically combat this type of terrorism. And this, of course, again, as I said, happened in the late 90s. Way before 9/11, way before terrorism and the war on terror was such a media buzzword and such a, you know, common theme in today's politics. And these compañeros were arrested, and many of them were charged with conspiracy to commit espionage. Basically, the charge was that they were collecting information that was a threat to the national security of the United States, which in the evidence that was suppressed throughout their trial in Miami, was just basically, it was ridiculous. I mean, there was absolutely no information that they collected in Miami within these organizations that would have threatened U.S. security. Nonetheless, all of that type of evidence, all of the transcripts that were read, all of the people that proved and could say that all the information they gathered was not a threat to U.S. security was suppressed. This trial took place in Miami, which a lot of us should know is extremely hostile to the Cuban Revolution and to anyone who is not, anyone who is an anti-Castro. So the jury itself was under duress. It was, you know, the jury felt on many levels that their lives were being threatened and that if they did not you know, support a conviction for these five compañeros that they could be hurt, that they could be receive death threats and things like that. So these compañeros went to jail in June of 2001 and for the last 5 years have been incarcerated basically for absolutely no reason. They did not violate any laws. They did not commit any type of crime. And international movement has grown.
Oh, hold it right there. That's a good beginning. Now tell us their five names.
The compañeros are Fernando González, Ramón Lavagnino, Geraldo Hernández, Antonio Guerrero, and I think that's all five.
No, there's one more, but I don't have it in front of me. It's okay, you'll get
René, them. René González, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Let's move to the assumption for a minute that at least a substantial number of our listeners should understand right now the seriousness of what you're saying and don't need further proof. Because the reason we call this Voices from the Front Lines is we want to move a little bit to the question of what do we do. I mean, for instance, there was let's update one important new fact, which is the federal trial a year ago, the federal decision almost exactly a year ago that overturned their conviction. Why don't you tell our listeners on KPFK 90.7 FM what the decision was, how the case was overturned, and it must be great that the five brothers must be out free, right?
Absolutely. We have to look at the fact that the year 2005 was an extraordinary year for the Cuban Five, and actually not just for the Cuban Five, but for anyone that does work around political prisoners, because the two decisions that came out in 2005 are unprecedented. The first thing we have to look at is that an organization at the United Nations, the UN Committee on Arbitrary Detentions, put out a resolution saying that trial was a sham, that it was completely arbitrary, and that they should not have been convicted, and that a retrial is necessary. So that in itself right there was victory won. A couple of months later, three judges of the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals made the decision to overturn their convictions. They agreed with the appeals that had been put out through the defense that there needed to be a retrial and that these five compañeros should be freed and retried. These two events happened close to each other in 2005, an extraordinary victory. I mean, we had never seen the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals or any type of court, you know, 11th Circuit Court, make a decision in favor of political prisoners, making a decision as well to favor a retrial in a different venue. We have to remember Miami is extraordinarily hostile, an incredibly hostile environment. And those three panel judges unanimously agreed on all of the appeals that had been made by our compañeros and the legal team. So right there, we were celebrating. We were seeing that there was a possibility that there could be a retrial. Unfortunately, the United States interceded. The government interceded along with the prosecution and called for the 11th Circuit Court to pressure them for them to create another hearing that took place this past February 2006 to hear oral arguments en masse, meaning all the judges would be present. In fact, all 12 with an additional 13th judge as an observer. And to hear oral arguments in support of the appeals that the three judges had actually agreed with. So, you know, we had these two amazing victories, two unprecedented actions take place in 2005, only to then in 2006 in February to have to kind of backtrack a little bit. What was found very interesting is once these overturned, the convictions had been overturned, most of us assumed, why are not the compañeros? Why have they not been freed? And that was something, a decision had been made that it was better that they had, that they stay in prison. To this day, it's still extraordinarily shady as to why that occurred, why these compañeros were not set free. But a lot of us felt that the U.S. government and the prosecution were going to be working together to, you know, try to do something to force them to look at it on bank. So,
hold on a second. So we're with Benjamin Ramos. He's with the committee to help the free the Cuban Five. You're on KPFK 90.7 FM. This is Eric Mann, and we're talking about this case. Now, let's move just a minute to the question of political organizing. Sometimes at this point in history, it's almost like if you're trying to teach someone to read who doesn't know any letters yet, if you're trying to change political minds, how do we begin with the idea that some people think Fidel Castro is a dictator, and in my book, I said he's the leader of the free world in dispatches from Durban. Some people say that the Cuban government needs to be overthrown. We think, of course, the Cuban government is one of the most viable, interesting social experiments that it's done, certainly more for black residents. It's the fact that it exports doctors when the United States exports napalm. I could go on. How do we begin to understand that the Cuban population of Florida in general, is run by a group of thugs, that they did steal the election in 2000? So the question is not you and I agreeing. How do we go into communities, beginning with Latino communities? Forget about, you know, Latino and black communities, let's say, and then we'll move to other communities. How does one organize to change opinions so that pressure can be placed on a system whose legal system is totally bankrupt anyway, that is that of the United States?
I think our first approach is that we cannot be afraid of these communities. And we have to go in there understanding that, especially with a Latino community that tends to be extraordinarily conservative anyway, we need to go out there and not be afraid to organize, to go out there and educate. I would never rely on mainstream press. As a journalist myself, and a radio journalist here in New York City, I would never say that we can rely on mainstream press. We have to go out there. We have to provide our own perspectives. We have to go out there and educate and be willing to sit down with all forces that are in our communities, everything from folks that we meet on the street to local elected officials to forcing community-based papers and community-based mediums to cover these issues. We have to bring these issues to people in a way that makes sense. And one of the things we talk about with the Cuban Five, and not just the Cuban Five, but on all political prisoners in general, is who these individuals are, making it clear that these are compañeros, women and men who are as human as they are, who have families, who were poets, who were students, who were workers, that reflect the same realities that many of the folks in our communities live in. We go out there with the premise that we're going to educate and to teach and to really engage in dialogue. I have been going to Cuba with the Venceremos Brigade, one of the oldest solidarity organizations around Cuba that is still working. And we are not afraid of going out there and educating. We're not afraid of bringing these issues to people, of organizing events in communities, of outreaching to students, to going to communities and having these dialogues. The fact of the matter is, if we really want to teach these people about what is really happening in Cuba, what's really happening in the United States, we have to be proactive about it, and we have to be somewhat proselytic about it as well. I always tell people, don't listen to your Disney media. Don't listen to your Gusano-owned Goya Vitaros type of media, because right. They're not educating you.
This is, by the way, this is Benjamin Ramos, who's with the Committee to Free the Cuban Five. Don't be afraid of the community is absolutely right, in my opinion. We just on a very small thing took on Proposition 73, which was the so-called parental notification for abortion referendum here. We went into a Latino community. We did 100 families, all of whom were told by the Catholic Church to vote yes on that. And through a process of organizing, we were able to get about 60 or 70 to change their mind. In your last 2 minutes, what can people do right now? Are letters to these companies available? Can people write to them? What should they do, for instance, with Javier Becerra, who's a congressperson right now, you know, from Los Angeles, or Lucio Royval-Allard? Are there any members of Congress willing to take this on even a little bit?
Well, we have to go out there and educate those folks as well. I think one of the best things that we can all do is get educated on the issue. The Popular Education Project to Free the Cuban Five has the website, www.freethecuban5.com. There's also various other websites that are out there. Sit down, read these things. We have letters that we want to be sent to Louise Arbour, the UN High Commissioner on Human Rights, in Geneva, demanding that the Cuban Five be able to receive stable visits for their families. We have letters to people like Condoleezza Rice, demanding that folks look at the case of the Cuban Five and that they be released or that there be a retrial. There's a lot of letter-writing campaigns that we have out there which we need people to get into. If you want to deal with local elected officials, then do the research and go to your local elected official and explain this humanitarian, you know, this human rights issue, this constitutional issue. It's important to say two of the Cuban Five are American citizens, and this is what's happening to two American citizens. They're having their human rights, their civil rights, their constitutional rights taken away from them. That means that can happen to any citizen, you, me, anyone.
All right, so I'm going to have to leave you there, brother, and I think we in Los Angeles and we on Voices from the Front Lines, we have to go to that website, www.freethecuban5.com. It's even got good music, folks. Go on there, and then let's call Maxine Waters. Let's call the Congressional Black Caucus. Let's call Howard Berman. Let's call Barbara Boxer. Let's call Senator Feinstein, that great progressive, and let's at least let them know that there's a controversy on this. Benjamin, thank you so much for being on the show. Keep us informed, and why don't we run this as an ongoing project on Voices from the Frontline, so we'll have you on throughout the year.
Wonderful. There's a lot of great things happening in September for the Cuban Five. It's their 8th anniversary of their arrest, and there's an international movement to do events throughout September 12th to October 6th, so I would love to be back on.
Sounds good. We're going to be back with Mtongolose Sanyika from the African Leadership Project in New Orleans. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back on Voices from the Frontline, 90.7 FM, KPFK.